Sellers, Holmberg.
Hi, here.
Armstrong.
Yep.
Heckman.
Yes.
Klein.
Here.
Oban.
Here.
Shively. Sobog.
Here.
Wardner.
Here.
Representatives Carlson.
Upstairs.
Here.
Baloo. Devlin.
Here.
Hogan. LaFour.
Here.
Lauzer. Mock. Schmidt.
Here.
Seibel.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
Okay, the consideration of the minutes of the last meeting, go ahead, motion.
Motion to approve.
A second, seconded. All favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Next, we have discussion regarding reconvening of the 65th Legislative Assembly for consideration of veto overrides. As you know, there was some vetoes. We also know that there was an Attorney General's opinion issued a few days ago, and I know that our legal staff has reflected on that and is going to make us a presentation. And I'm assuming it's John. And you have a handout.
Mr. Chairman, I have all kinds of handouts. I'm going to first pass down copies of the Attorney General's opinion. I will also pass to you copies of the memorandum that we provided to the Attorney General with respect to our analysis of the vetoes prior to the Attorney General writing the opinion. And we sent that to you during the last meeting. I sent an email to each of you as well, but there's a paper copy. And then we will also, the third document is the analysis of the opinion that we did. And that's a document that I will go through with you now, and please stop me along the way if you'd like to ask questions. But the document, the third document that's on its way around, the analysis of the opinion, is broken down into three columns. The first column addresses the actual language that was vetoed. The second column summarizes the opinion of the Attorney General. And the third column is the analysis that we prepared of, first of all, of the governor's rationale that was stated in each of the veto messages, and then secondly, the analysis of the opinion of the governor, or of the Attorney General. So each page of this document addresses separately each of the vetoes that were addressed in the opinion, each of the item vetoes. Page one is addressing Section 6 of Senate Bill 2003. That was creating a new statutory section that regarded capital projects and capital lease requests with respect to institutions of higher education. The Attorney General kind of gave what I guess we'd say inconsistent responses on this one. There were one, two, three sections where he said the veto was proper, that those sections did not relate to any appropriation in the bill. And then he also said that the veto was improper with respect to two of the subsections where the some of the money in the bill was related to the conditions that were in the sections that were vetoed. So it's we have a section now that based upon that opinion that the Attorney General has determined that two of those five subsections were improperly vetoed. We certainly don't argue with the fact that the sections that were vetoed that the Attorney General said were improper. We certainly don't argue with that. We have some concerns that there was some inconsistency in how that was applied, but that was the least of our concerns with respect to the following items. And if you move on to page two, it addresses another section in Senate Bill 2003. And in that section, there was a veto of three words, section 18, that it vetoed any portion of those three words, and the Attorney General said that that veto was ineffective, that it vetoed a portion of the sentence constituting a condition on an appropriation, but not veto the appropriation of funds to which the condition applied. And we certainly agree with that. And that was stated in our memorandum that we passed around to you, where we, that was part of our analysis. However, we were concerned that the Attorney General's opinion did not address the issue of vetoing just parts of a sentence. And there's a fairly substantial amount of legal precedent that suggests that a veto of a portion of a sentence like that is giving the governor the ability to legislate by way of the veto pen. And that was not addressed in the opinion, so we certainly have concerns with that. The exact language that our court has indicated and other courts have said is, the governor's veto authority is not the power to enact or create new legislation by selective deletions. And we felt that this was a selective deletion. So although the Attorney General ruled that it was ineffective on other grounds, we felt that it probably should have gone further and addressed that as well. Page 3, section 39 of that same bill, there the Attorney General determined that that the veto, again, of a part of a sentence, the language, and for credit hours completed at the school, was proper. And the discussion in the Attorney General's opinion went into statements of legislative intent and not being able to bind future legislative assemblies, which we know that that's not, we agree with that, but we're concerned that, again, with the fact that there was that the opinion ignored Supreme Court opinions and previous Attorney General opinions that indicate that a governor may not create new legislation through selective deletions. And it's not that this, you know, this is legislative intent, that it's not a significant legal issue with respect to that type of language, but it is significant in the effect that it is allowing a governor to change legislative intent through the veto power. Page 4 gets into Senate Bill 2018.
Sure.
We had extra copies made of this document in case we ran out, so Alan has those. Senate Bill 2018, Section 12, the bill had Section 1 that appropriated $2.25 million for a grant and voucher program. In Section 12, there was language that put conditions on the use of that money, and it broke it down into several $300,000 appropriations among the larger appropriation. And this veto, again, vetoed part of a sentence, and it vetoed just one of those allocations of $300,000. It wasn't the actual appropriation in that section that was vetoed. The appropriation, remember, was in Section 1 of the bill. It was the condition on the appropriation. And there, we disagree with the opinion in the respect that the Attorney General said the veto or the appropriation in effect, those are the two words used, was vetoed. Well, the appropriation was in Section 1. It was a $2.25 million appropriation. That wasn't vetoed. It was just a condition on the appropriation. So we disagree with that part of the opinion. We also, again, argue that you cannot selectively delete part of a sentence to legislate. And that's what our view of this is doing. It's changing your intent by taking out just part of a sentence. Page 5, Section 5 of House Bill 1020. We agree with the conclusion that the veto is ineffective, that it does violate the constitutional principles set for with respect to item vetoes. However, again, we believe that the Attorney General failed to address the issue of whether it was improper for the governor to veto a phrase within a sentence and alter the legislative intent of the sentence. And to give you an example, it's it's my view that, that this is opening a rather large door for future governors to veto parts of sentences. If you have an appropriation bill with a section that says the funds may not be used for this purpose, this has opened the door for, I believe, the governor to veto the word not in that sentence and allow the governor to change the, entirely change the intent of that statement. Because the Attorney General failed to address in these sections that, that important issue about changing the intent and legislating by use of a veto. So we feel strongly that, that that's an important issue for you to consider, that, that you cannot, that the governor shouldn't be able to legislate by using the veto and striking words or phrases. And there is a solid line of authority that supports that, as our other memo will point out to you. Page 6 addresses Section 12 of Senate Bill 2013. Again, we were happy to see that the determination was that the veto was ineffective. Our concern is here that the request for the opinion was very specific in asking the questions with respect to the veto. So we didn't ask about the budget section and the generally, I think it's been the Attorney General's process not to side, you know, track into other issues. In this case and in the next couple of instances, the Attorney General has moved into whether the budget section having budget section approval is a constitutional issue. And we just feel that that wasn't part of, you know, really part of this request and was something that didn't need to be addressed. It wasn't an issue that was relevant in this case. Just because there's a belief that the budget section approval may be unconstitutional, that doesn't make the fact that a governor exercised an unconstitutional veto, that doesn't override that fact. The veto is still improper, and the question about the budget section is something that probably is an issue that didn't need to be addressed there. Page 7, that dealt with the two study committees that were vetoed. You know, we agree that the Attorney General said there's no legal basis for the governor to prevent those committees. You were well aware of that, and you went ahead and established those committees anyway, and they will operate during the interim. So it, as a practical matter, it had little effect, but it's important to recognize that you know, do you have broad authority to study issues, including issues related to the budget, and we'll do that during this interim. Just at the bottom of this, there are three bullet points that, you know, we'd like you to keep in mind. All of your enactments through legislation are presumed to be constitutional unless declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. And remember, it takes 4 of the 5 justices to do so. So But that and all doubts must be resolved in the favor of their validity. So you keep that in mind, that you do carry that presumption of constitutionality. Courts, again, this is a point I've hit over and over. Courts generally hold governors may not legislate by veto, and any doubt over the extent of the governor's partial veto power should be resolved in favor of restricting that power. You see at the bottom, we cite a handful of cases that support that preposition. And then courts generally prohibit governors from selective deletion of words or phrases to create legislation that's inconsistent with the intent of the legislative body. That's really our biggest concern here is the vetoes that the governor exercised that were partial sentences or words or phrases that really give the governor that ability to change your intent by using the veto power selectively like that. Mr. Chairman, that's my summary. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Are there any questions, Mr. Bjornson, Senator Wardner?
Yes. Mr. Chairman and Mr. Bjornson, so if we were to litigate, would those be the three things that would be our focus as we move forward? Because, you know, those would be the major areas that we'd be contesting.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wagner, I think that your major issues would be that, number one, the ability to strike words or phrases.
Okay.
That's really, I think, important issue for you to consider.
Okay.
You mentioned three. I'm trying to remember.
I was looking at the ones you listed. That's all. The ones you have listed on the sheet.
Yeah, right. But absolutely, we believe that that's the most, absolutely the most vital issue right there. You know, one issue to keep in mind, the Attorney General has indicated here and in some previous opinions that there is a belief that the budget section approval is a delegation of legislative authority, that if you're to litigate, that would probably be an issue to be pulled in by the other side as a side issue. It probably wouldn't be the worst thing to have answered. The opinion and the results leave a lot of questions out there. What will be the response of the executive branch, or the governor and his executive branch officials in handling the portions that the Attorney General said were ineffective? The general rule is that Attorney General opinions govern the activity of officials. It doesn't require them to follow it, but they if they don't, they lose some protection. If you have an attorney tell you to do something and you don't do it, you're probably in more trouble than if you had followed that advice. Now, it's one person's opinion, and it is simply that, an opinion. It's not a ruling of unconstitutionality.
Oh, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Bjornson, wouldn't we define what we're going to argue in court if we were to litigate? I mean, you can't bring, the judges wouldn't let them bring in other stuff, would they?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Warren, if you'd like to define what the standards would be, but it certainly could expand. And I could imagine that the court would probably be happy to address that other issue, the delegation issue.
Well, one more thing, Mr.
Yeah.
Chairman, and that, and Mr. Bjornson, and how, if we were to proceed with litigation, would you be the one that would be arguing for the legislature, or somebody on your staff, or our staff?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Wardner, it's not something that we have done. In past cases, the last time we've had an issue was with the Fighting Sioux nickname, and we had outside counsel do it. We would do whatever your wishes are. If we had outside counsel, we would certainly provide as much assistance as possible to reduce any costs. If it was your desire that we do it, I'm not going to say we can't do it. It's just that's not what we have been trained to do, most of us.
Okay. If you go back in history during the time of the lawsuit between the Senate and the Lieutenant Governor, two senators were the ones that were argued for the Senate. I mean, two senators, I'm thinking it was Howard Freed and Messing, that sued. And I believe the Attorney General backed the... I think he did. But doesn't the Attorney General in a lawsuit have to choose?
Well, the Attorney General's responsibility is to defend the statutes as they are on the book. Now, I'm guessing, judging by his opinion, he may not be comfortable doing that, and I'm not sure that the legislative branch would necessarily be comfortable in having that happen, considering we know where the Attorney General stands on that issue.
Mr. Chairman, does this go to a district court or does it go right to the Supreme Court if it were filed?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wardner, I think this would be a ripe issue to go right to the Supreme Court.
Senator Armstrong, you had a question?
Well, yeah, I was wondering if we had to hire lawyers, how we'd pay for them if we can't approve it through budget section, but we could do that. Well, my question is, where are we right now, I guess, particularly with a couple things. One, I read the budget section language almost like dicta. It wasn't really ruling on anything. It didn't really give a definitive answer to anything. But more concerning to me is the question on that $300,000. Before we know where we're going, we kind of need to know where we're at right now. And with budget section and attorney general's opinions and state agencies, I don't really feel like there was an opinion there. Would you agree with that? It's just more like, it's like dicta in a Supreme Court decision.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Armstrong, I agree entirely with that. And with respect to your other question about the $300,000, I would argue that entire $2.25 million should be wiped out rather than just the $300,000, because that was the full appropriation in the line item. The $300,000 was part of the restriction or condition on the use of the money.
Yeah, I'm not even sure I disagree with you. I'm just wondering, according to what has been put out right now, I read it and I don't know where we're at. I don't know if we're at the full money, if we're $300,000 left. I don't think the opinion was to strike the whole 2.25, the Attorney General's opinion.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Russell, I agree. I think because the opinion used the words, I think it said something to the effect that the $300,000 was in effect appropriated in Section 12. Well, the $300,000 was set as part of several items. The section wasn't an appropriation section. It was, I think, a section listed as exemptions and probably intent. The full appropriation was in Section 1. But yeah, you're right, Senator Armstrong. I don't know where it is, which means that it probably comes down to what the governor's staff, the Office of OMB, or Office of Management and Budget decides how they're going to handle that appropriation. And then at that point, you may have another issue that you need to address, whether in court or otherwise.
And then,
yes, continue, Senator Armstrong.
And then, Mr. Chair, and then that goes to my third question with dealing with these particular and these substantive one-word vetoes. And so, we come in and override, we don't have to give a reason why we override. It doesn't really, and now that we have an Attorney General's opinion out there that I think probably clouds it more than it solves it to some degree, if we come in and override those, that's just the legislature overriding a veto. That's not state. There's no, we don't create any new situation for that. So one way or the other, regardless if we go back in or not, we need to address this issue in some other fashion.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Armstrong, yes.
Anyone else? Representative Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, obviously Senator Wardner and I asked for these opinions, and we did not take all the vetoes. We did not do the one on the townships. If we were to go back in, that's a straight up or down. We approve it or not. It was a perfectly legal veto. We had two sources of money for it. He vetoed the whole works, and it's gone. But these other ones, I guess, Mr. Bjornson, what would you expect to be the response other than the one I handed out from the governor's office? Do they have to follow any of this? When it says it's improper, it's ineffective, it is proper, it is ineffective, you go on to other language that it really didn't do what it was supposed to do, but it did it. And his press releases that we read from him, it says that the Attorney General's opinion supports the overriding intent of these vetoes to protect the executive branch authority, preserve the separation of powers, and prevent the spending of scarce state resources without the benefit of full transparency and the scrutiny of public involvement awarded through full legislative review. And I would argue that everything we did had full legislative review,
and that it was done with full transparency. And what it did do is it took away legislative authority, but is there anything that he has to do because of this opinion?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, it's a little bit gray here, but Attorney General opinions, and let's see, if you look at the last page, sort of the footnote at the bottom. This opinion is issued pursuant to Section 54-1201. It governs the actions of public officials until such time as the question presented is decided by the courts. So that's basically citing a North Dakota Supreme Court case from the 40s that indicated that public officials, and I thought I might have had it with me, I don't, that public officials should be guided by the Attorney General's opinions, that acting in a manner contrary to the opinion, they do it at their own peril. So what that means, I guess, is if the governor and Office of Management and Budget didn't want to recognize the parts of the opinions that said the vetoes were ineffective and used the money in other ways, they're doing that at their own peril, and I suppose you could argue that that's a misuse of public funds. But and what your options are probably to bring an action to stop that use you don't have a whole lot of options there for you, really. I mean, they can do that, and somebody's going to have to challenge it in one way or the other.
Would there be any responsibility on the part of the Attorney General to defend his opinion, or does he just get to stand back and let someone else do it?
Mr. Chairman, in
cases where funding was spent when the Attorney General had said it was improper.
I don't know what the Attorney General's role would be there. It probably, you could argue, it should be a law enforcement role and address the misuse of public funds, but that would be entirely in his discretion.
Can I continue, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Well, I think it's our responsibility, Mr. Chairman, to defend the legislative branch of government and the duties that we were assigned. There's no one that can spend money besides us. There's no one that can pass laws besides us. And when those laws can be changed by striking selective words, I think that we have legislation happening from another branch of government. And I'm having a real hard time accepting the fact that you can do that. Now, if we disagree on spending money, that's fine. If you don't agree on the township money, veto it. Then it's up to us to make the call. But if you take out the words for $300,000 but don't take the money, and we have no idea, like Senator Armstrong said, if the money's floating in outer space or not, that's not correct. That's legislating by selecting words out of language that we passed. And I think our legislative intent in most every case was very clear. We agree, and I'm going through some of these things that council staff did, and in the Attorney General's opinion, the governor's veto authority is not the power to enact or create new legislation by selective deletions. I think that's a big part of this. And when one says it's effective and now we're stuck with it, it just doesn't seem right that can happen if the Attorney General's opinion is it's ineffective. Now, I disagree with some of the things that he did, and I agree with some of them, but I suppose that's how we view it in the prism of being a legislator. But I think our intent was always clear, but to strike the word not in a sentence could change spending of millions of dollars from shall not to shall, could change our funding mechanism completely. How are they going to use the dollars in these things? And they talk about earmarks. You know, I don't know if you got an earmark, and on purpose, I'm sure the money was set in one line item and the three things were listed in a separate part of the bill. Which was probably a smart thing to do, but it was probably something that did not allow them to get at those. But another thing the Attorney General did on page 4 that I just can't understand at all, it talks about, and he did get into the budget section, we've had this argument before, But the last sentence says, also making significant budgetary decisions is a function of the executive branch of government. And I couldn't disagree with that more. I think those budgetary decisions are made by the legislature, and he can make all the recommendations he wants, but it's up to us to make the decision and to make those decisions about the budget as it goes through. It's our responsibility to balance the budget, and we are held responsible for that. As far as we knew, by the way, we talked a little bit about this before we asked for the opinion, that because of some of these things he vetoed required budget section approval, that there was an opportunity for the Attorney General to look at the process. And this isn't new. As long as I've been here, there's been discussion whether or not there's any authority or if it's a property authority to have the budget section approve things. And the understanding was with the intent of the legislature to allow them to. So everybody voted on it. But if that's the case, then there should have been mention made of the Emergency Commission, which follows the same basic guidelines as the budget when it comes to being allowed to make decisions on various types of money being spent. So if we want to go there, I suppose Mr. Bjornson, we could, but it was a can of worms that's awfully big. My biggest concern is that we had legislation being done, we had selective words being removed, and in the future, if that is the trend that we're going to have, in my opinion, I think we only have a few options when it comes to dealing with this. The first one, we could just sit back and accept it, move on and say, we'll make sure we'll write it better next time, or we'll hide things better, or we'll list them better so they can't be touched, you know, and I would prefer not to do that. We could have a veto ride session for a day, or we could come in and then, like you said, you address just the veto, you don't get into all the other things. You could ask the Attorney General for more clarification, and I'm not so sure that that would be a productive way to go after reading the first opinion. Or the last one, and Senator Wardner talked about, is what happens if you litigate this? Because I don't see that anybody has to do anything with this if we just walk away. They all stand, even though it says they're improper. And I think it would be wrong on our part to do that. I don't have a motion or anything, but when they come back with language like this, and I believe that our staff did an outstanding job of getting the information to the Attorney General, and I think as long as it took to get the opinion, I think there was a lot of disagreement up in that office as to what these opinions should have been. I don't think it was a slam dunk on anybody's part. We all come from different branches of government, but when the balance starts to shift away from the responsibility that we have, then I have trouble with that. And I think we need to do something, and I would be anxious to hear what the other members of this committee have to say.
Senator,
I have a question, and I hope legislative counsel can answer this. My understanding with the Attorney General's opinion is whether we come in, I know one answer, and I'm pretty sure I know the second answer. We don't come in to override the AG's opinion. We just override the vetoes of the legislation. But if we would choose to litigate this, we're not litigating the AG's opinion either. The AG's opinion has really no effect in a court of law. We are litigating the dispute between the executive branch and the legislative branch. And then the question is, right now, what effect does the AG's opinion have on any of this? That's the question where we're all a little murky, but I think I'm right on the first two, correct?
Correct, Mr. Chairman and Senator Armstrong.
Yes, Representative Leffert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, question for you. When the Attorney General puts that the veto is ineffective, then that makes me question, does that mean the veto stands? Or if it's ineffective, do we have to go to, if he's making a statement effective, do we have to go to court to overturn what he did? Or what does ineffective mean?
Mr. Chairman, Representative LaFleur, it's a good question.
Better asked of the governor.
Of the Attorney General.
Or the governor.
Or the governor. Yeah, right. It depends on how the governor responds to it. I would have preferred, rather than saying it's ineffective, I would have preferred that it say that it doesn't, it's in violation of the constitutional provisions regarding item vetoes.
Okay.
I have a question.
Senator,
the way I read it was ineffective because the legislative intent exists whether it's in the legislation or not, so they still have to follow it. When they use the word ineffective, that, I mean, that's how I read the opinion. It said it doesn't matter that you strike it because the legislative intent still exists, so they still have to follow the legislative intent. And maybe that's part of the murkiness of the opinion, but that, I guess that's how I read it, as opposed to being improper, is saying it just didn't matter because the legislative intent still exists.
Senator Wardner.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to move that we litigate this. And if we get a second, I'd make a couple of comments.
What are you litigating? Everything or those points that
I would litigate the points that were brought up.
The bullet points?
The bullet points that John Bjornson put down, if that's appropriate.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wardner, there are several points that could be litigated. Primarily the issue of selective deletion of words.
Right.
But you know, we'd probably have to look through each of the item vetoes and determine which ones would best be put before a court. Now the item veto on the first page, we don't necessarily have a real strong argument on that one, so I don't know that would be something that would necessarily need to be included, but the ones with selective deletions and vetoing conditions on an appropriation without vetoing the appropriation itself, those are the main issues that I think need to be addressed.
I would agree with Mr. Bjornson. I don't think we need to go down the murky path regarding budget section and emergency commission, because that was just brought in. That wasn't part of the discussion, but certainly those two points on the conditions and the selective deletions, because I think folks would recognize that if the governor takes out shall not, and it becomes a totally different bill if he can do those kinds of selective.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's what I was anticipating.
That's what you said.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, okay. But I mean, it's the word deletion things that need to be corrected.
Not addressing the money? That would be part of it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I think that I have to go through it. The primary issues were with the word deletions, but the $300,000 one, that one is that issue, but it's also the issue of vetoing an appropriate, or not vetoing the full appropriation, just vetoing the condition on the use of the money. So I think that is part of that larger issue there.
So that would be included, yeah, okay.
Of selective deletions. Did we have a second to that motion? Okay, Senator Heckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So when you're discussing that, and a little bit earlier I heard Mr. Bjornson say we should look at these to see which ones could be litigated, put the cart before the horse, where we're already saying let's litigate, and Mr. Bjornson's saying let's see what we should be able to litigate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Heckman, I guess it was my opinion that those were the two primary issues that needed to be addressed.
Okay.
That would have, I believe you said, the most long-ranging impact on the legislature's ability to pass laws.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we had Senator Sorbaugh was next, and then...
Mr. Chairman, this is for John. So if what you're talking about, the motion, how many of these would it be affected? Every one of them by this motion?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sorbaugh, no, I don't believe
the first one
okay.
would be part of that. The second one, yes, because although it was determined to be ineffective, it would be part of that larger issue of selective, selective deletion and legislating. The third one, veto is proper. Let's see that. Yes, definitely. Yes. The fourth one, that was the fourth one. The fifth one, it was determined to be ineffective, but it didn't address all of the issues, so that probably could be included. I think Mr. Chairman and Senator Sobog, we would need to sit down as a staff and with anybody that outside counsel or whomever would handle this and make those determinations on a maybe a more thoughtful basis than me sitting here and going through yes, no, yes, no.
Senator Wardner.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just a comment on what Mr. Bjornson just talked about. I would like to think that we have some latitude here to put a case together that this motion doesn't have to have lock in, that it has to be just this, or we can't include some things, or we get them in. So there's going to be a time in here where we're going to be some planning. But what I wanted to say is that, first of all, keep this in mind, members, we could just have a veto session. And I don't have a problem with that, except we only got 3 days. And we need 3 days in order to do any type of work. And so I'm reluctant to go that route. So that's why the motion to litigate. I believe we cannot, I agree with Representative Carlson that we need to make sure that this doesn't happen again. We got to make sure that our authority isn't acted upon, taken away from us. So I believe that we do need to make a statement that the governor was out of bounds on this one.
I think what you're saying is that we have a case, but we can't build that case by committee. That has to be done by the legal folks who know the nuances that not all of us on this panel are aware of all the nuances. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's pretty clear if you look to some of the previous opinions, especially on page 7 at the bottom, when you look at what counsel did for us, and it talks about some different cases, and the governor may not distort, frustrate, or defeat the legislative purpose by a veto of proper legislative conditions, restrictions, limitations, or contingencies based upon appropriation and permit the appropriation to stand. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. And it also says the governor's veto power is a negative one that does not allow him to legislate by striking qualifications in a manner which distort legislative intent. I think we have solid ground to say that we have done our homework. And we may have a difference in opinion whether we like it or not, but the method he used is wrong of how he did it. And I, as much as I'd like to have had a veto override session, because I do believe that in several instances, the township money for one, I think that we would have had the consensus. If we'd have talked more about the water issue, I think we could have overridden that veto. But some of the other ones were probably not worth taking back and having the veto because they were words that were taken out. Well, we need to make sure that's a policy that doesn't happen again. So, I mean, I'd be happy to come back, but, and I guess my question for Mr. Bjornson was that, say 6 months from now, Mr. Bjornson, there's a complete change in the Affordable Care Act, and we have to come back and address Medicaid expansion. We have to address other issues. Are those veto overrides still available to us at that point in time?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I believe so. We haven't done this before, but we're still the 65th Legislative Assembly. There may be some practical effects of what's done by the executive branch in the meantime, but in a strict legal sense, I believe you have that ability.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, just because this is a little bit complicated and it's hard to craft a motion, I would think that we would like to have council with our direction craft what they believe the issues that we are interested in litigating and getting them back to the members of this committee, and we can send any comments or call in any comments to council. And if you feel we need to come back to approve them, that's fine. I'd be okay doing my phone, but I do think it's hard to ask him to do all this without having it written down. And I would think that, John, I don't know if you would like to comment on that, if you think
clearly,
that's enough direction to go forward, or...
I'll jump in. Clearly, we need to have something to respond and react to, number one. And number two, we have to give staff time to be able to do that. And number three, particularly if we are talking about very likely we will expend some money, therefore this committee has to do the authorization and not just staff. And we could easily schedule another meeting by phone. Senator Armstrong.
Question.
As the only lawyer on the panel.
Well, as a lawyer, I understand lawyers and clients pretty well. And number four on that as to who speaks for this body. Because if you're going to start putting presenting a case together up at legislative management or legislative council, does that all 150 of us get to call and weigh in? Or are we going to possibly create a little, streamline that a little bit and maybe be a little nicer to our lawyers than letting 150 different people call in and weigh in on how we start doing this? Or do we just let them do it completely on their own, which I'm comfortable with, but I don't know if everybody else is.
Well, at the end of the day, this body here is the one that's responsible for saying yes or no. Do we proceed or do we not proceed? Not the 150 or not the 141.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, Senator Armstrong is talking about that. I'd like to hear his opinion as to how he thinks we should handle this forward. Allow council to draft what they hear from us today and put it into a brief or whatever the right terminology is, and see how you think that as an attorney you proceed.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I also think that we do have legal minds in both chambers, and not me, because unless you get arrested on your way out of here, I'm not the best legal mind for that. My predecessor on the Senate Judiciary Committee was very good at that, and I know you have members in the House, too, that are as good at that. And I know, even though they will never say it, that legislative counsel would appreciate dealing with a finite group of people as you're moving forward to put this together. I mean, whatever group that is, that can be this group as well, but I'm just saying it is a lot easier to move forward doing things like this if you are answering to a smaller group of people as you're putting this stuff together.
So what we're looking at now is a draft. John, you're the one. Tell us what you're hearing so that when we leave, we have an idea of what it is we said.
Mr. Chairman, I think giving us a few days to sort of formulate some thoughts on what are the best issues to address would be helpful. It would also be helpful to Senator Armstrong indicated have some input from some of the attorneys in the legislative assembly. I'd appreciate talking with a few of those. And then deciding how best to go forward from there. You know, you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, that in the past senators or House members have represented the body. I didn't see Senator Armstrong volunteering for that, but that's certainly a possibility. I mean, that who has more at stake? Of course, we do as well in our jobs, probably. But I don't know. You have to make a decision on how you want to proceed at that point. But I think we narrow the issues with some input from attorneys in the Legislative Assembly. We report back to you in a fairly short amount of time, and then you try to make a decision as to the, not necessarily the legal issues, but how best to proceed as far as counsel and moving forward in that respect.
Well, clearly you would have the ability to visit with the attorneys who are in the legislature to get a little bit of their wisdom again. Anyone else? Yes, Representative LaFleur.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, John, my only question, too, is when I read the veto is ineffective. I'm not a lawyer, I get that, but I still would like to know what the practical effect of that is. I mean, are we arguing a moot point? Will the Attorney General say, this doesn't stand?
Mr. Chairman, Representative LaFleur, no, even we don't know what the effect of the ones where the Attorney General said the veto is ineffective. We could speculate and probably conclude that the executive branch would prefer to, maybe not prefer to, but would defer to the opinion and respect that decision. But we don't know that. But the bigger concern with us and with the legislative branch is the issues that were not addressed, or the ones that were not found to be ineffective, and which we believe should have been determined to be ineffective because they selectively deleted words or phrases. So that's the larger issue.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Klein was next.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, and what did I hear? Does the governor sort of get a do-over then when he says ineffective? Could he sit back now, look at what the opinion, once he's put the veto stamp on, it's a done deal? Or can, after looking through what we've just discussed, can make a determination that, okay, I'll give up those words? Is there an opportunity to do that, or is this just we're working off of the vetoes and that's a done deal?
Right, Mr. Chairman, Senator Klein, there's no do-overs for the governor. He's made his decision. Now it's I guess it's whether to abide by the opinion of the Attorney General with respect to the ones that were determined to be ineffective.
We have a motion.
Well, I just had one. Comment, Mr. Chairman. We have to remember that his opinion is just that. It's not a court of law. It's his opinion, his view. We happen to disagree with his view. We have attorneys as well. It really has no force that says everybody has to change tomorrow. It's an opinion. Am I correct in that, John? This means nothing until the Supreme Court or someone else rules on it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, correct.
And he references that in his opinion.
Note, yes.
Can we have a Senator Robin?
Mr. Chairman, before we take a vote on the motion, I would like to know the exact motion we are voting on.
Okay.
There was discussion about, the motion was made to litigate, and then there was discussion about putting this memo together about what exactly we would potentially be litigating if we chose to litigate. So I would like to know what we're voting on.
And the easy answer is to ask, what do the minutes say our motion is?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think it's that the committee is voting to proceed with litigation with the understanding, and be part of the motion, that the committee will receive a document in the future detailing what's to be litigated, and after getting input from various legislators. But basically, it's to proceed with litigation.
But the litigation actually would not proceed, Senator O'Bannon, I'm telling you, unless this body then approved the document.
Proceed. It's a process.
Yeah, it's part of the process. Any other? Okay, let's make some history. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Sundberg.
Yes.
Armstrong.
Yes.
Heckman.
Yes.
Klein.
Aye.
Oban.
Yes.
Sorvag.
Aye.
Wardner. Representatives Carlson.
Yes.
Devlin.
Yes.
LaFleur.
Yes.
Mauser.
Yes.
Schmidt.
Yes.
Seibel.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
The motion carries.
I have a bit of...
Okay, there's one other item. We had discussion regarding the reconvening. I am assuming, unless someone makes a motion, that we will just move on. You had another issue to bring up. So we are moving on. We will not be voting on whether we're going to call the legislature back into session. Senator Robyn?
Mr. Chairman, could, as a part of this work that Ledge Council is going to do regarding the litigation, could we have some information about what is going to fund that? I would kind of like to know how much it's going to cost and where it comes from.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you know, if it's done in-house, that cost would be covered by our budget. You know, and if we decide to go with outside counsel, we would look at using available funds, which would include some carryover monies that we have, hopefully from the 2015-17 biennium for the legislative council, legislative management.
Okay, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to give this one more opportunity here. I have some, I want to request a different chairman for one of our committees. For our different committees, if I get a second, I'll explain why it would be the chairman of the Educational Policy Committee. And I would, my motion would be that the chairman would be, all of a sudden I'd absolutely do it. You're running mate.
Mark Owen,
because he is the chair of the Education Committee in the House, and the vice chair would be O'Ban.
That was
a second, I'll explain why.
That was in the form of a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
I'm seconded by Representative Schmidt.
Well, Mr. Chairman, obviously last time we took the whole list and said that we tried to make some changes on a lot of the whole list. This one has to do as much with the fact that we have a chairman of the Education Committee in the House and one in the Senate, and we have both education committees in the interim being chaired by senators. And I think that there should be a representative, there should be a chairman of my committee, should be chairing an interim committee in the House. He should have that opportunity. He's the one who will be chairing the next session. He will be leading those discussions and those issues. And I think that it would be fair to have one from each chamber on each of those committees. The second concern, and I do thank Senator O'Ban for getting my name right on her Facebook site when she spelled it right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I do have some concerns about the fact that there's a little bit of a conflict of interest there with her husband now as the new executive director of the teachers union. And I think that that's just a little too close to the issue, and I would feel uncomfortable with that. So with that, that was my logic for making that motion. There were no other changes to the committee other than the chairman and the vice chair.
Okay, any other Senator Heckman?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll oppose that motion certainly because of the area of the expertise that Senator O'Ban will bring to this committee as chairman. I think she'll do a nonpartisan work on this and bring all issues forward in a bipartisan, nonpartisan actually way so that everybody has an opportunity to testify, bring their information forward, and bring pieces of legislation forward. So I will oppose that motion, and I'd like to see Senator O'Ban stay as chair of that committee.
We do have a motion. I just want to do one other thing here. I have to count something. I would like to defend what this committee, the majority of this committee, passed some days ago. I don't see a great danger at all from a political standpoint, from a partisan political standpoint, when Senator Orban is chairing a committee with two fellow Democrats and 13 Republicans. I don't see a groundswell of partisanship being able to overrun that particular committee, but maybe I'm wrong. So I would hope that we would vote this motion down.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think you just made an absolutely perfect case why it should be a majority person chairing the committee. Thank you.
We won't go back into history. Remember, you have appointed more Democrats as chairman to interim committees than I ever did.
But Mr. Chairman, there was also two sessions where there were none.
And I chaired one of them, and we did one of them.
Yes, you did.
Okay. We will call the roll on the motion to substitute my running mate. Thank you very much.
I did it just for you.
Yeah, but he didn't vote for me. He was a believer. Okay. Okay, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Sumner.
No.
Armstrong.
No.
Heckman.
No.
Klein.
No.
Oban.
No.
Sorbach.
No.
Wardner.
No.
Representatives Carlson.
Yes.
Devlin.
Yes.
LaFleur.
Yes.
Lauser.
Yes.
I didn't know you were. Schmidt.
Yes.
You couldn't
have voted.
Seibel.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion fails.
Okay. Anything else? Oh! Well, there is. The House needs to appoint.
Did I give you somebody already?
No.
For PNA, it has to be someone from, or should be someone from Judiciary, and Maribel's is ineligible because he is. Representative Karen Carls.
We should have a motion.
Okay, could we have a motion? Because it has to be done by the committee.
I move that our representative be Karen Carls on PNA.
Okay.
Second.
And for those who didn't catch that, Maragos was, but he has served 6 years and he can't serve any longer.
Second.
And seconded. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Sumner.
Yes.
Armstrong.
Yes.
Second.
Yes.
Klein.
Aye.
Oban.
Yes.
Slovak.
Aye.
Wardner.
Aye.
Representatives Carlson.
Yes.
Devlin.
Yes.
LaFleur.
Yes.
Lauser.
Yes.
Schmidt.
Yes.
Seibel.
Yes.
Chairman, the motion carries.
I'm afraid she's going to still talk about that. She's going to find a way to.
Okay. I'll take a motion to adjourn. Moved and seconded.
I'll discussion before you take the vote.
Okay.
Just the procedure of how we're going to handle this information. Are you going to call us back to call the chair? Or?
It'll be at the call of the chair, and it could be a telephone.
Okay. Just so we understand.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We're adjourned.
Armstrong. Yes. I'll talk to you about that soup.
Okay. What the motion actually was.